You're listening to Extra Time Radio.
David Goss is in my house. I will not let him sit on the furniture.
No.
He's sitting on the floor right now. Yeah. He doesn't get to have a chair anymore.
That's what I'm willing to do.
Hat trick for Deuce. 2 hat tricks in 4 games.
Are you watching the games? Are you just looking at the stats? Modge Podge.
Hodgepodge?
Hodgepodge.
Modge Podge.
Yeah, there's a Modge Podge. Whole Modge Podge of rumors.
This is a transfer Modge Podge.
It is an ungodly mess.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think about what I want to say.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time Radio on MLSsoccer.com and SiriusXM FC Channel 85. I am Andrew Wiebe in the green room with David Goss. Out in the octagon where the Cats have just been booted because they were waking up is, of course, Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle. How did your bouncing go there with Taquito and General Sal, Doyle?
You just shake the bag of treats and they come running, so it was pretty easy.
Yeah, that's how they get us out of the green room, too, just right outside the door. They just
Free food in the lunchroom?
Oh, well,
all of a sudden, Wavy goes through the wall.
Yeah, I got like 2 plates getting down. Hey, big show for you today. Of course, the Hot Take Hotline is going to debut, so we'll give you that in just a little bit. But also, Jonathan Spector of Orlando City jumps on with us to talk about the move from Birmingham City, his U.S. national team career, and maybe, just maybe, whether Orlando City or the Chicago Fire or somebody in MLS can win the World Cup. So that's definitely
one. The dream is near.
Yeah, the dream is there. Of course, that's a reference to the Bastian Schweinsteiger press conference, which we will get to in just a second. But first, we have a jingle that somebody sent in, Dave. If you aren't familiar with the Hot Take Hotline, well, get familiar, because if you can call 401-206-0-MLS, 401-206-0-MLS, and then we've got another
Hot Take Hotline.
Oof.
Yeah. Ooh, there's more of that weirdness.
It's better than you.
Yeah, there's more of that weirdness coming later on. But first, before we get to the mailbag, well, we'll really go through the Hot Take Hotline. I want to commemorate, for all time, the very first hotline voicemail we ever got. This is history. This is ETR history. Play that for me, Dave.
Is this the Hot Take Hotline? Billings, Montana should be the next MLS expansion city.
Yes, that's money, right? That's good stuff. He didn't even know if it was real. You heard the questioning in his voice. Is this the Hot Take Hotline? I'm not even...
Honestly, I kind of just want to start dialing random numbers and being like, is this the Hot Take Hotline? Billings, Montana, expansion now.
Hey, we looked up Billings. Only population of 110,000. That's a negative. But the views are incredible. Makes the Commodore Perry Bridge look like, you know, like... rinky dink, like nothing.
Just throw a stadium down at the foot of the mountains.
Yes, let's go, Billings.
I gotta tell you, I'm more of a Missoula guy, to be honest.
More of a Missoula guy. Okay, yeah. Well, you know, to each his own. To each his own. We'll get to that in the mailbag. We'll get to Jonathan Spector in the second segment, as well as some U.S. national team talk. Of course, the Nats with a 1-1 draw in Panama City was not necessarily the result they were looking for, but it was a good result all the same. 4 points in the hex now. You're shaking your head.
Weeby, you live on your own planet when it comes to the national team.
Why?
Last show, you were like, there's no way they're not going to beat Panama. It's
no,
like,
I didn't say that.
Tough
I said
game.
I said they should beat Panama.
They didn't.
That was one. Look, we'll get into that a little bit later. First, let's jump into some big MLS news because a lot of stuff went down. Mike Pecky is the new head coach of Real Salt Lake. He takes over for Jeff Cassar. Of course, he was hired this year to coach their USL team, Real Monarchs. That all changed after a couple games, a couple bad results, some injuries for RSL. Petke now in to right the ship. His first game will not be this weekend. He says, look, interim coach Daryl Shore has set the game plan. He's set the tone with the team. He'll get that job done in Minnesota on Saturday. That one's at 8 p.m. Eastern on MLS Live. Guys returning from international duties. They've got some numbers coming back. But in general, Doyle, I want to get your thoughts on Mike Petke in his second MLS head coaching job. Of course, we know what he did with the Red Bulls. It's a different situation. It's a different club. It's a different style of roster building. What will Mike Petke do in Salt Lake City?
I think what he has to do is get the team a little more organized and a little tighter through the midfield than they have been the last couple of years. The Red Bulls were good at that when he was the coach. They weren't the high-pressure team that they became under Jesse Marsh, but they weren't exactly easy to break down. I thought they were pretty organized. And you know, Petke did a decent job of incorporating young players into the team. That said, he has to do a better than decent job of that with RSL. First of all, it's a different league now than it was in 2013 and 2014. Second of all, it's just a different franchise. RSL, if they're going to compete, they have to be what Dallas have been. You know, they have to be a team that gets legitimate top flight difference makers from the academy. And while there are a lot of people responsible for that in that franchise, ultimately it comes down to the coach of the first team to play them and to make sure that they, when they're out there, improve and are able to be guys who can get you points. RSL haven't had enough of that. And that's why the change was made in the first place.
Of course, there are rumors out there that they were looking for a disciplinarian, Taylor Twellman saying that that was the deal. That's why they went with Mike Pecky. Gio Savarese was apparently in the conversation here. Josh Wolf interviewed for this position. And then they go with Mike Pecky, and it is another chance for him, Dave. And there's been a lot of people clamoring for this from the moment that he was fired. I was going to say let go, and then in my mind I just heard on loop, why did you fire Mike Pecky? And I was like, okay, I can't say let go. He gets another chance. This means the world to Mike. You could see that on the podium. You could see that on stage. He's been waiting. Now he's got it.
And credit to him that he took the Real Monarchs job, right, in the first place. He got himself back into coaching. He got himself back into the conversation. And it seemed like Deloitte Hansen knew him coming into Real Monarchs, and so he was a known entity for them. And they liked the way that he's worked so far. So they have a little bit to go off of how he works in that environment, how he works in that city. And, yeah, it's a great opportunity for him. There's only so many jobs. That's the tough part about these coaching situations, is it's not like, well, maybe you can apprentice and, you know, there's set number of teams, there's set number of head coaching jobs. Now he's got an opportunity here. And, I mean, I've said it on this show so far this season, injuries have been bad for this team. I think there's more talent here than people expect, and I think this team can challenge if they can get a little bit healthy. It's a matter of getting the pieces to fit together in the correct way. That's not easy. It's not set up perfectly right now. So it's going to be interesting to see him. He managed personalities well in New York. That's not as much the job here. It's more tactics, and it's more, like Doyle said, youth development. So we'll see how those sides of his ability show.
Too bad he's not coaching this weekend. And apologies to Loons fans out there. But
it's a must win.
Seems like Minnesota United are the tonic for misfiring strikers and squads that need a win. Doyle, is it Yura Mobsisian this week? Is he going to go grab 4 or 5? What's the deal here? Who's getting their season going?
I mean, I got him on my fantasy team. getting Francisco Calvo back should help the Minnesota defense. But I think that, as you said, they've been the tonic for just about everybody this season. I hope for RSL's sake that they get one of the kids to start banging in some goals, because they need that. But look, Yura is a DP, and he's getting paid all that money for a reason. And if he doesn't start scoring regularly, then I think there's reason to worry in Sandy.
Well, he has to be looking his chops ahead of this week. And we'll stick with the Red Bulls. They play Houston. They go down to the Dynamo on Saturday night at 8:30 MLS Live. But Bradley Wright Phillips, new contract. He's re-signed as a designated player, they announced. And our own Sam Stachkal is reporting that that's a 7-figure deal through 2019. He's been rewarded for basically the most prolific goal-scoring run of anyone in the history of the league, Dave. Some have wondered about the timing of this. Ultimately, I think, look, you reward the guys and you make sure the guys that are the crux of your team are happy and secure, and that's what they've done here. BWP, I don't know what else we can say about him that we haven't already said. Like, congratulations. Get your money, man.
It's been awesome. He's a great personality. He's a great part of the league. I also think when you look at the Red Bulls, they're not DP players away from making an MLS Cup run. So for them, it made sense to make sure he understood that he was a centerpiece of this team, because they're a TAM level, you know, center back and maybe central midfield or wide midfield option away from contending for MLS Cup. And that's, I think, how they see their team. So why wait? Why waste it? You have the opportunity to reward this guy, keep him going. He's been playing, you know, in different formations now this year. He's still scoring goals. He's, every time he gets in the box, he's dangerous. He's not, you know, a lightning fast player where athleticism is key to his game, so he's going to keep scoring goals. So it's nice to see them reward him. It's nice to see, you know, a guy, although it would be great if he was American, but it's nice to see a guy come in, you know, work hard, and then eventually end up being a DP.
And make himself a legend within a club. You know, because I think there was so much doubt when he came to New York. He came as that trialist, and they signed him, and you were saying, man, he doesn't – it's not that impressive. And then he scores a bunch of goals and he sets a record. And then it's Thierry Henry did this. Yeah, BWP was just kind of Thierry's tool to score goals.
That was the worst thing that's ever happened.
Yeah, that was it was disrespectful.
So annoying. It was oh, he should have 80 goals. It's like, Thierry, at some point, just stop. The guy scored 30 goals. Like, just leave it. It was so miserable.
It was. Now he's got that DP deal. Got to be feeling good about himself. Going down to Houston this weekend, 8:30 p.m. on MLS Live. FC Dallas are not playing this weekend. They've got a bye. They're going down to Mexico to train. They're there right now, actually, ahead of that CCL match that could put them in a final. It's a big game. It's an awfully big game. But Oscar Pereja, Poppy, he's got a new deal. The details are undisclosed here. We don't know how many years he's been extended, but he's there for the long run. He's got a 53-30-22 record in the regular season with Dallas, and 76-60-34 overall as an MLS head coach. Remember those Rapids years? This is the crux of FC Dallas's plan. Yes, the academy, Doyle, is a huge part of that, but the guy who built it and continues to milk it is Oscar Pereja. I mean, this is a huge move, and in MLS terms, it probably won't get the attention that it deserves.
It is an extension, so I'm not sure how much attention it does deserve, but like, didn't we always think that Dallas were locked in with Pereja for the long term unless somebody came in with an obscene offer? So I get what you're saying, but it just reinforces what we already knew about this team. I do wonder if there is a U.S. national team clause. If I was Oscar Pereja's agent, I would have said, okay, I'll sign this extension for X amount of money. But if the U.S. national team, or maybe even Colombia, but
I was gonna say,
unlikely, come calling, there has to be some sort of mechanism to spring him out at a reasonable offer. Because, look, if we're rating MLS coaches or, you know, worldwide coaches for the successor to Bruce Arena in 2018, I assume, Oscar Pereja is at or near the top of the list. And I do also think maybe LAFC, their looming presence, could have forced Dallas's hand a little bit here. Because if I was LAFC, I would have approached Pereja last winter and said, whatever you want, go ahead and do it. But it's a good sign for FC Dallas. And if Pereja keeps doing what he's been doing, they will be some happy campers in Frisco.
Also, some reports out there that scouts, European scouts, are monitoring a number of their players, the likes of Walker Zimmerman, of course, Kellen Acosta, we know. Also, some rumors about Maxi Arruti, which I'm not sure I buy quite as much. If you were going to scout this team, and I know we love Kellen Acosta, putting him up next to Walker Zimmerman, what's that make your brain do, Dave? What's the balancing act between those two? I mean, obviously both are good young prospects, but just the fact that they're getting this attention from scouts, which it's not really surprising, is a vote of confidence for Oscar Pereja and the talent that he's producing up there.
Well, you look at the fact that their academy players are getting picked off to come into European academies, just shows you how people value players that come up through them. Now, Walker Zimmerman didn't come up through that academy, although they drafted him and then handled him very well to get him to this point.
By the way, Weston McKinney made his first start for Schalke the other day.
Yeah, the trio of Americans at Schalke, it's the great hope. No, there's a million great hopes right now. But it's exciting. But, yeah, so it just to FC Dallas's point and something that we've seen Pereja do, what he did with Fabian Castillo, it's another recruiting tool for him to say, look, you can have this great future and be a part of FC Dallas as well for local players, but also for players in Mexico and South America and Central America that he can recruit at a young age, like he's already done in this offseason, to say there's another step, maybe if that's what you're looking for, or you could have a home here.
Yep, the path is pretty clear, it seems like, for those young players at Dallas. There's support from the franchise, and there's a head coach that's going to be around for a while longer in Oscar Pereja. No game for them this weekend. That's too bad, because we definitely like them to watch them play. Chicago are playing at 3 p.m. on Saturday. They host Montreal. That one's on TSN and MLS Live, and we're still waiting to see if we'll see Bastian Schweinsteiger. I would guess that they'll introduce him and give him some time to settle in with the team on the training ground. No reason to force him into the field of play. But look, we joke about this question in the press conference. But outside of that, Doyle, I thought Bastian said all the right things, which you expect him to do. A guy with that pedigree and that experience. I thought it was interesting to hear him talk about pressure and say, hey, wait a minute, like, I played Dortmund in a Champions League final as a Munich player. I played for, you know, the biggest prize in international soccer. I've done all these things. Like, I think I can figure this out. How would you handle his arrival if you were Veljko Panovic? What would you do as far as when he comes into the team, how he comes into the team, and this whole progression that's going to have a lot of eyes on it?
You put him in right away.
Really?
You start him this weekend if they figure that he is fit enough to start, and you roll it out. I don't think that with a player like this, you need a long runway. Obviously, it's going to necessitate some changes in terms of formation and maybe a little bit in terms of style. And obviously, somebody's going onto the bench. But get over it. This is a guy that they bought for a reason. It's not to sit him on the bench and coddle him and keep him in bubble wrap. They got him so that they can win games, and they have to start doing it right away.
This is winnable too. No Ignacio Piatti.
Well, I was going to say my tactic would be go tell David Akam to score a first half hat trick, so you could bring him in easily in the second half. Not really have to stress about it, which is an entire possibility that could happen for Chicago in this one.
Too bad plans don't work like that.
No, it doesn't work that way. And Jonathan Spector in the second segment will not be happy about me even joking about that. But I don't think it's that tough. I mean, we talk about it, but like, Artur Alvarez is going to the bench. Michael Deleuze is going to have to slide out wide a little bit, and Bastian Schweinsteiger is going to come in. And that's the type of upgrade you'd like to be able to make for a lot of teams. That's not a knock on Alvarez, but he's not a game changer right now in Major League Soccer. And Schweinsteiger was captain for a World Cup winning team within the last 2 years, so that's pretty good.
And I think Arturo can be a game changer. But maybe not for 90 minutes, game in, game out. Now the competition gets ratcheted up. You got a World Cup winner in there. No negatives there. Of course, some big games Friday we haven't mentioned. That's kind of different this season. You were used to those Viernes de Football games. These aren't Viernes de Football, but they're similar. They're national TV. Two FS1 games on Friday night. TFC hosting Sporting KC, TFC's home opener. Then Seattle hosting Atlanta United at 10 p.m., so 7:30 and 10, your Friday night is booked. You can watch the second one on Fox Deportes as well, and MLS Live and TSN up in Canada. If you had to pick one of these games, which are you picking? I'm going to put it out to both of you because I'm picking Seattle-Atlanta, and I'll just put that out there right now. I think it's just an interesting game in both style but also in kind of philosophy as far as building. So
TFC home opener. That they sang the anthem the first year when Defoe and Bradley came in. It was amazing. If anyone hasn't seen online, there's an oral history of TFC that just came out.
John Molinaro, good stuff.
Talking about throwing the cushions in the first ever goal they scored, which wasn't the first home game of that season because they didn't score for four games. But TFC home games are always amazing. MLS Cup was fantastic. And I think that you'll just, like, you get that feel through the TV when you watch games in that stadium. It's pretty fun.
So I'm writing this column, and the first opening line right now is the Seattle Sounders did not invent soccer, and they certainly did not invent Atlanta United. And we've kind of seen this comparison between the two, Doyle, as far as how they've built, the infrastructure they have, the backgrounds they have. I'm starting to, you know, I think there are similarities, but I think that it's a trap for people to look at these two teams and say, oh, same template, same everything, you know, the inspiration for Atlanta United or Seattle. That seems like a trap to me. It just doesn't seem authentic.
Yeah, I mean, I get what you're saying, and I get what they're saying as well. It is, there are similarities, certainly in terms of where Atlanta went shopping and the relative age of the guys they went shopping for. But you're right, there are pretty substantial differences. And I agree with you in principle that, like, this is the exciting game. Because everything that's happened with Atlanta so far, like, has come with a caveat. The Red Bulls were on 48 hours rest. Minnesota United was, you know, Minnesota United, and the game was played in a blizzard.
Apologies,
Chicago
fans.
Was, you know, there was the early red card. So things, like, as good as they've been, and I don't want to downplay it, it feels like the data points have been a little bit shaky. And that's why, I mean, Seattle versus Atlanta should be, I mean, that's must-watch TV on Friday night.
And they lost Carmona for that one game, but pretty much the lineup's been consistent now. Joseph Martinez is gone. Kenwin Jones is probably going to be the one who comes in, who is as good a bench player as you probably have in Major League Soccer.
At least as good of a bench forward, center forward backup. Certainly.
So we'll see what happens, though, but it's got to change the way that you work a little bit because he's more physical, he's a bigger presence, but He's probably not going to live on those through balls as much as Martinez does, but it gives you more options for crosses. So we'll see how that changes the way Atlanta works.
Can you get Almiron running off of him? That's a big question there. We'll see. Of course, no lineup stays healthy all year long, and there are some injuries right now in Major League Soccer. Pay attention to those. Make sure you set your fantasy team before this weekend, and hit us on the Hot Take Hotline, 401-206-0-MLS, 401-206-0-MLS. We're going to go to break. When we come back, Jonathan Spector of Orlando City.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime at mlssoccer.com or tweet at extratime radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
Feel like a firefighter's when I take off your shoes and all that's in between are not so loose. Just to see you through.
Back now on Extra Time Radio. In the green room, David Goss and Andrew Wiebe hanging out. Out in the octagon, who else? Matt, the armchair analyst, Doyle. And we're going to talk to Jonathan Spector in just 1 second. But first, those Kyle Larin transfer rumors, those are not going away, guys. That is going to be a topic of conversation all the way through the summer. And if it doesn't happen in the summer, through the winter as well. Some tabloidy stuff here recently. And Jason Kreis came out and said, hey, it's news to me. I haven't heard from anybody. There's been no official offer for Kyle Larin. But the numbers in those tabloids were awfully low, in my opinion. I think it was like 2.5 million pounds from Everton, which I don't think there's any way that Orlando City lets him go for that amount. But, Doyle, when do we have to start resigning ourselves to the fact that perhaps Kyle Larin is going to be out of this league sooner rather than later? And how does Orlando City deal with maybe that impending sale?
I think everybody should resign themselves to that fact already. That whether it's this summer or next winter, he's gone. And I think it'll be for big money. And I think my fingers are crossed that it's not to a Premier League team, because young talent just does not, it's not the best place. I would rather see him. I know Benfica has been rumored, which would be great. Somewhere in the Bundesliga would be great as well. Our buddy Sam Stashkill actually had a good column a couple of weeks back explaining why it probably makes financial sense for Orlando City to try to hang on to him through the end of the season and sell him during the winter. But as for how they deal with it with this new shiny bag of money that they will have gotten for Kyle Larin. I mean, this is the way the business of soccer works worldwide. And over the last couple of years, we've seen MLS teams taking more and more steps in that direction. And as painful as it is to see one of the most exciting young talents in the league leave, this is what the league has to do to improve. And you have to be invested in making sure that when a guy like Kyle Larin or Fabian Castillo leaves, there is the next kid up who has been trained and who is ready and who is going to make the most of that opportunity. That's soccer in the modern game. And it's a good thing that MLS is moving more strongly in that direction.
It's also a good thing because we still get to watch Kyle Larin week to week. Hasn't happened yet, so enjoy him while he's here. A big game this weekend for Orlando City. They go on the road for the very first time. Orlando City headed to Columbus, Crew SC, 4 p.m. Eastern, Uni Mas, also Facebook Live. Go check that out, and MLS Live. You can also check out MLS Match Day Live on Sunday, 8 p.m. Eastern, ahead of that Portland-New England game on ESPN2. Make sure you tune in. Make sure you have fun with us. Hit us with some comments. Jonathan Spector's on the line now. He's a good follow on Twitter, at JSpector23. Jonathan, what's up, man? How's it going?
Hey, it's going well. How are you guys?
We're doing good. I'm just wondering right now what Orlando City's chances of winning the World Cup are, how you feel about that pursuit. You know, which way are you going to go with that?
Yeah, obviously I'm a Chicago boy, and I'll be rooting for my hometown team. But if they can't win it, I'd like to think we can win it here in Orlando.
Of course, we're referring to the infamous question by now that went viral to Bastian Schweinsteiger, which actually might have been the best thing that could have happened at that press conference because now everybody is paying attention. What did you think when you saw that clip? And I'm also curious what you think about Schweinsteiger coming to MLS and coming to Chicago. Of course, you're a Chicago guy.
Yeah, we'll start with the clip. I was a little bit taken aback and surprised that he was asked that question, as I think he was and everyone up on stage with him. But I thought Chicago handled it pretty well, trying to rephrase that to winning the MLS Cup as opposed to the World Cup, which was a little bit bizarre. But anyway, in terms of him coming to Chicago, I think it's great for the club. I think it's good to have a player of that caliber who just a couple of years ago has been winning everything for club and country. So I think it'll bring a lot of excitement and enthusiasm and hopefully energize the franchise and the fans there. I'm not sure when we play them. I think we have a couple games against them coming up in maybe May and June possibly. So, certainly be a good test for us as a team when we come up against players of that kind of caliber.
You're in your Twitter handle. It says number 23. You also wear that on the field throughout your career. Is that a Michael Jordan reference right there? Chicago guy?
You know what? It's actually not. I've worn a lot of different numbers, 18, 23, now currently 2. I just haven't changed my Twitter handle. A little bit slow on that, to be honest, though. Thanks for calling me out on that. In fact, I think I only just recently changed my picture to an Orlando City one. That took me a little while, too. Someone else called me out on Twitter saying, you play for Orlando now, not Birmingham anymore. So people don't let me off the hook too easily.
No, crowdsourced advice.
But no, it just so happened that when I signed for Birmingham City, 23 was available, and that's what the manager there wanted to give me. I've never been too picky with numbers, so I was fine with that. And I thought, you know what, if it's good enough for Michael Jordan, it's good enough for me.
So let's talk about the move to MLS. Of course, you spent, 14 years in England, which is incredible just to say it out loud. I mean, that is a long time. That's more than a career for most guys. What was the tipping point? What was the moment that you said, you know what, now's the time. I'm coming back to MLS. I'm leaving Birmingham City where I've been for so long. What was the tipping point for you?
Well, I was fortunate to have such a long career in England. And I enjoyed all 14 years, certainly ups and downs. I was lucky to play for some top teams over there and with some of the best players in the world, and I learned a lot from them. So I'm grateful for the time I had and spent there. But the tipping point was kind of just the opportunity I had here. I've got a young family now, and the plan was always for me to come back to the United States with my playing career. Was finished, and if I had the opportunity to play in the MLS, it's something that appealed to me, the idea of helping the sport in this country grow and being part of that process. I mean, it's incredible the impact and the growth of the sport and the league in this country. So for me to be part of that's pretty special. In terms of the timing of it, it just worked out really well. It just seemed to fit both the club here, the management, everything about the situation made sense to me, and it made it a relatively easy decision for me to make that move, which could have been a difficult decision. So as I said, I spent 14, long years and relatively successful years in England.
Jonathan, you didn't get the Brad Friedel accent, though, the pseudo-English accent after all that time.
No, you know what? I think having a wife that was born in the States probably made a big difference. But some people do say I have an accent. Some people say I don't. It's definitely not a Chicago accent anymore. I don't know what you would call it, but I don't know. Maybe, I don't know. It's a worldly accent. We'll go with that.
Very cultured accent. When you look back at your time, though, you went over as a teenager, 14 years. We said you're still only 31, plenty of years left to play. When you look at the path you chose, the way it worked out, what do you reflect on your time in England?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting. I think there's different paths for everyone. I'll take Clint as an example. We had very different paths. He went to college here in the United States and eventually made the leap to England. Now we're both back here playing, but I think it's different for everyone. For me, the time was right and the opportunity was too great. I had the chance to sign for Manchester United at 17, and it was just nearly impossible to pass up. I remember I went there for a trial for about a week and a half last day. Sir Alex Ferguson offered me a contract, told me not to sign anything now, but to think about it, go home, talk to my parents. And I just remember that flight home thinking, how am I going to convince my parents that this is what I want to do and that I don't want to go to college right now? Because that was always the plan for me. But I was fortunate they were incredibly supportive. And it made my transition to living away from home and in England that much easier. But as I said before as well, there were some ups and downs, some disappointments, obviously. Injuries are always a difficult one as a professional athlete. And that was tough, being away from home and not being able to do what I wanted to do and play the sport I love when I was over there. But overall, it was a great experience for me, and I wouldn't change anything about it.
One of the big conversations right now is Christian Pulisic, a young star. And Americans, we have an ability to put pressure on young players to be the next big thing. You felt that at Manchester United. How did you read that, though, across the ocean? Not seeing American fans every day, but knowing the expectations of you being at Man U and the history that the U.S. national team was trying to build.
It's completely different. I won't downplay what it was like for me. But at the same time, I think it's a lot harder for Christian to deal with at this point in time. You know, social media wasn't then what it is now. He's probably bombarded with it day in, day out, that daily reminder. And it's difficult for him. I don't know him particularly well, but for him to be able to do what he is doing, he obviously has to be grounded down to earth and handle himself in a professional manner at a young age, I think is really impressive. And I think he deserves credit for that. As well as the incredible performances he's put in, you know, for the national team and for his club. So I think it's a lot more difficult for him than it was for me. And I think everyone should sort of take a step back and kind of be reminded of that he's still a young kid and to give him a little bit of a break when things aren't going particularly well, because there are going to be times like that. At the moment, he's on a high, but it's not always like that during a career.
So 14 years, you know, you're at Man U, you're at West Ham, you're at Birmingham City. Give me an idea when you look back on the best moment. I was looking at goals, and I don't want to compare it to Christian Pulisic, man. Two different positions, but I think it's one league goal, and you had the two against Man U that everybody remember in Carling Cup. Like, what's the moment over 14 years that you look back on and is kind of a high point or something that was truly special for you?
Yeah, not exactly prolific, so it probably didn't take you too long to go through the
I got through the reel pretty quickly, but...
Yeah. It's difficult to pick one moment. If I had to pick one, I'm going to pick two because it's too difficult. First, my debut, you know, playing for Manchester United was incredible. It was actually, you know, a preseason game in Chicago against Bayern Munich. All my family was there. That was just a really, really special moment for me. It was a kind of culmination of a lot of hard work and determination and support from my family. So to be able to play in front of my hometown family and friends was really special. And then as you touched on that game against Manchester United playing for West Ham, the two goals. I think I nearly had a third, which would have been the first goal of it, which... I was offside. Someone else took a shot, hit off me, like my hip, and went in. And could have had a hat trick, but I would have had a hard time claiming that as my own goal anyway.
You never think about that, though. Clearly, you never think about that moment. So you're at training. You look across the field now, and we're talking about Christian Pulisic, and another guy who has real European dreams is Kyle Larin. And there have been rumors, which there always are with young successful players, linking him to, EPL and the likes. When you look at him, when you stepped into training for the first day, as you played a couple games with him, what do you see from Kyle? Does it, when you see the profile of his game and who he is as a player right now, do you think that's a leap that he's ready to make?
I do. I definitely think Kyle's ready for that. Obviously, completely out of my hands in terms of whether or not he goes, but as a teammate of his, we'd love to keep him here. But I do think Kyle's more than capable of playing in England. He certainly has the physical stature and the ability to. It's just whether or not that move transpires for him or not. Like I said, it's not something that's mine, but if we can keep him, I'd love to have him here at the club.
Of course, Kyle, with three goals so far, all of them at home, getting the wall going, getting the purple smoke going. opening up a new stadium has got to be exciting. And you mentioned kind of that, that desire to help build the game in the United States. And that's definitely happening in Orlando. We've seen them rise very, very quickly. What do you make of this market? What do you make of this new stadium? And how do you kind of think about these things in terms of where the game was 15 years ago when you left compared to where it is now?
You know, the market of Orlando in terms of sort of the excitement surrounding this team, the fans, the support, that was something that was really important to me in terms of making my decision of coming to the MLS. You know, Orlando's got, as you guys said, a great fan base, a great following. How they've, the club's managed to get so much excitement surrounding this club is incredible in such a short period of time. And to see the growth of it in Orlando and throughout the country is pretty amazing. And it's something that I definitely wanted to be a part of. So it's special for me to be here in the city playing for this team for a great set of fans. You know, I think the growth of the league has been exponential over the past, I don't know, 10, 15 years. It's been really incredible. So for me to be part of it and for me to open a new stadium is a completely unique experience for me. I've never done that before. I've played in stadiums in England, a couple hundred years old, but nothing quite like this. So it was pretty cool to be able to do that and to kind of christen it with a win was definitely special.
So your first shot in MLS, your first shot back in the U.S., schedule comes out. What are you circling? What's the experiences that, you know, watching from afar that you're excited about, or maybe some of the players that you know from national team or training or whatnot that you look for, that you want to face off against?
That's a tough question. You know, I've followed the league kind of from afar. You know, I actually, Sky Sports asked me to do some commentating when I was in England on the MLS, so. I kind of did a little bit of that and was able to stay in touch with the league that way, which was pretty fun for me. But it seems like, you know, Portland, Seattle, Vancouver, kind of out that way, the Pacific Northwest out there, seems to have some pretty cool stadiums and good following. So it'll be fun to play in that atmosphere. And then also Chicago, you know, it's my hometown. So to have worried to think about how many tickets I'll need for that game, but it'll be exciting for me to have all my friends and family there again, which doesn't happen too often for me.
When you look at the games so far, and I know there's only been a couple, you had that cancellation against New England due to weather, and you look at the quality and the way the game is played here right now, how do you compare it to your time Birmingham and West Ham, and where is it in comparison? This is one of those questions that MLS fans are constantly wondering about, and it's kind of like an international soccer thing. How do leagues compare? What do you see?
Sure. I think it's really difficult. I mean, I'm very weary of making a comparison to another league. So I think it's pretty unique, you know, the way the league is structured, salary caps, and how players are brought in and out. So it's very, very different. So it's difficult for me to make that comparison. But I suppose the closest comparison to it would be the championship, you know, which I played in for a number of years. And the reason I make that comparison is because of, you know, it's a physical league, it's end to end. Games can get very opened up at times and spread out. And it's very athletic too, which I think you find in the championship. So I suppose that might be the closest comparison, but I wouldn't really want to go any further than that. You know, at the same time, here in this country, you've got players who you would not find in the championship. You know, we touched on Bastian Schweinsteiger a moment ago. You know, players of that sort of quality and caliber, and players like Pirlo and Villa, who we just played against in New York City. Those guys aren't going to be playing in the championship. You know, they're coming here and playing. So I think it's exciting to have players like that in this league.
You mentioned all the big-name players in MLS now, and it's not just the David Villas of the world, of course, the U.S. national team. Many of the veterans are there in this league now, the Jozy Altidores, Clint Dempseys, as you said, of the world. You know, I think back to the 2010 World Cup, and, of course, you were there in South Africa, and then opportunities sort of dried up under Jurgen Klinsmann. I'm wondering what you attribute that to and what you thought about kind of the progression of your national team career.
You know, I think, you know, I unfortunately had some injuries quite early on in Clemson's tenure as the national team coach and had to pull out of a couple squads and found it difficult to get back in after that. So it's just something that happens. You know, my focus is always with my club team, and I hope that the national team call-ups will come as a result of my performances with the team, and that's no different here. You know, my focus will be with Orlando City, and hopefully I'll be able to represent my country again, because it is a huge honor, and certainly it's still an aspiration of mine as well to play for the national team, so hopefully that will come. But as I said, my concentration will be on my club team, and hopefully the rest follows.
Let's talk about your club team. Big game coming up this weekend. You finally go on the road for your first time in MLS. What's the conversation been in the locker room about this matchup?
You know, we've done a lot of work. We've had a lot of time to think about Columbus because of the international break and not having a game. But our preparation has been no different than the home games we've had. As you said, it is our first away trip. But we're still preparing the same way. And getting ready for the game in the same kind of professional manner that we have our previous games. And we're going there looking to get 3 points if we can. We want to get a result and continue the good start to the season that we've had.
When you see the film on Ola Kamara, he's a guy who I picked to be in the running for the Golden Boot this year. What do you see? And like when you look around the league at the forward matchups that you'll have, does it excite you? Do you see a level of quality that you know, kind of reminds you, hey, this is going to be a real test week in and week out with the travel, with the quality of the players?
Sure. I mean, that's part of the exciting things about this league, being a defender. You know, you come up against some of the best attacking players around, not just Kamara and Columbus, but you've got Higuain as well. You know, we've already come up against David Villa at New York City, and that was a huge test for us too. And I think he's kind of a similar player. He wants to play on your shoulder, get in behind. So, we've been tested that way once before, and I think we handled it relatively well, and hopefully it'll be the same case this time.
Saturday, 4 p.m. Eastern, Orlando City headed to Columbus to face Crew SC. You can watch on Unimas. There's a Facebook live stream, a little new technology for those of you out there. It's also on MLS Live in Canada. Jonathan Spector in the central of defense for the Lions. Good luck, Jonathan, this year. Thanks for chatting with us, man.
Thank you, guys. It was a pleasure.
Jonathan Spector, good dude. Still trying to work out how that team's going to be going forward. They got 2 wins at home, but there have been some chinks in the armor. So we'll see what happens with them. Remember, 4 p.m. Eastern on Unimas, Facebook Live coverage. Where else? MLSsoccer.com. Let's talk about the Hex, guys. The U.S. now in fourth place, 4 points, tied with Honduras on points. Of course, their goal differential is better than Honduras's because they laid that 6-0 beatdown on Los Catrachos. Panama got that 1-1 draw, and, you know, we wondered, and by we, I mean we, me, not we. I keep saying we, but it's me. I wondered how Panama was going to stand up to what I thought was going to be a better U.S. side from an attacking sense, but I got to tell you, that field made it hard to do just about anything. It looked like, you know, like the beer league golf course I played on in college. It was tough. The ball was real bobbly. 1-1 game here. Christian Pulisic with the assist to Clint Dempsey.
One of those moments where it's like, man, our upbringings are so different.
Yeah,
sometimes.
They are. I was thinking about that before the show. I was like, you know, we've got an East Coaster in you, and of course Doyle is too, but we're counting him as a West Coaster now in the Midwest. So we're covering all our biases.
No,
our
we
biases
don't have South.
Are, that's true. But nobody ever talks about a South bias.
Wow.
I'm just saying they don't. I'm just saying they don't say that. It's not normally said.
Weeby's bleeding.
I know. Here comes the hot
here.
Take hotline comments in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. Uh-oh. But a 1-1 draw here. Not a bad result at all. I'll continue to establish that. Christian Pulisic with a moment of magic to set up Dempsey. But this was not a pretty game, Doyle. This is not a game like Honduras that you watched and afterwards you were kind of jacked up and elated. It was a game you kind of nodded your head and said, okay, result. There you go. Job done.
Yeah, it was CONCACAF, man. It's really, really tough to win on the road in CONCACAF, especially against a team that's as good defensively as Panama. You know, they've conceded now, I think, just 5 goals in their last 11 home games. That includes a shutout against Mexico to start the Hex, or the second game of the Hex. They haven't given up multiple goals to anybody except Brazil since, I think, 2013. And so this is, you know, as as disappointing as I think the U.S. play as a whole was, the result is great. The result is very good. How about that? And it's kind of in line with what expectations should be. The U.S. have one road win in qualifying in Central America this decade. One. So it's, you know, anyone who is bemoaning the state of the program after this is
crazy.
Not, yeah.
Sorry, wild.
Yeah, but what about Jermaine Jones? I mean, I'm out here looking at Twitter, and
he just actually texted me.
Yeah,
that
he just hit me up. He's I don't know
Doyle's
if he's listening to the show or like. He says why? No. What do you think about this tweet? If you didn't pay attention, Doyle wrote an article saying that Jermaine Jones, the time with the U.S. might be coming to an end. Jermaine reads your work. He tweeted back. He says he's not surprised that you're coming up with this stuff. What do you think about this, Doyle?
Not much. You know, like one of the things that you realize pretty early on in any journalism job is that everybody says they don't read the stuff that's out there, but everybody reads everything. He is not the first player or coach that I've or GM that I've heard from about a disagreement, and he is 100% within his rights to come at me. You know, part of my job is to be available publicly for disagreements. And what kind of idiot would I be if I criticized Jermaine Jones for how he did his job, which I did, but then was touchy when someone criticized me for how I do my job. It's all part of it. And you know, good on Jermaine for, you know, feeling like he had something to say and saying it publicly. So, I wish more athletes would do that.
So for those of you who didn't read the article, maybe sum that up, Doyle.
I think that the U.S. generally play worse when Jermaine Jones is in there. He's just too much of a freelancer, and I think it damages the overall structure of the team. I think that it's really, really hard to possess the ball purposefully when Jermaine Jones is in central midfield, and we also become much more susceptible to counterattack in years just because he doesn't have any discipline. In years past, his athleticism was so off the charts incredible that you could say, all right, this is a sacrifice worth making, combined with a relative lack of depth in the spot that he plays. I don't think we're at that point anymore. I think he's pretty clearly lost a step, and Panama showed it a little bit. And I think that we have guys like, you know, Alejandro Bedoya and Kellen Acosta and, you know, more and more coming through the ranks who are probably better players right now. And I think that it's time for Bruce Arena to reduce Jones's role. I'm not saying he should be out of the player pool entirely, but I don't think he's a starter for the U.S. at this point.
I think I said the same thing on Monday when we were talking about whether or not he should start in this game. I agree with Doyle. And one of the biggest things is the relationship with Bradley. It still hasn't worked. And at this point, it's not familiarity. It's just, I think Doyle's description was water and oil or something with those mm-hmm. two. They don't mix. They don't play, see the game the same way. They don't fit together. And he's got to find something else. And back to what we've been saying for weeks now is the depth of the player pool. So you have options. It's at one point you needed Jermaine Jones' talent on the field. When he first came in under Bob Bradley in the 2011 Gold Cup, you needed that talent on the field because you just didn't have talent in the pool. You didn't have players that could break the game open, players that could make special things happen. That's not the case anymore. And, you know, to Jermaine Jones' credit, he's played for the national team for 6 or 7 years. He's had a great career. But you're 35 years old. Now's not the time to see, like, why would someone force me out?
Let me just make this point. I think we would all agree that Christian Pulisic was more effective as a number 10 than he was on the wing, even though he was really good on the wing. Playing Jermaine Jones means you probably can't play Christian Pulisic as a number 10 unless you want to go to a 4-2-3-1. And if you go to a 4-2-3-1, that means you're going to have to bench either Clint Dempsey or Bobby Wood. I can't figure out a way in which you would choose Jermaine Jones over one of those guys.
You could put him on the you could put him in Sebastian Legette's position.
Right, which,
on the
is,
side of
which
the
is kind of what happened in the World Cup.
It was just what he did in 2014. But that was, once again, to an older player. That was 3 years ago at this point.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't know. What he did in 2014 was he ran in an insane amount and was super athletic.
Yeah, look, the water and oil thing, I'm completely with you on that with Bradley and him. But I think it's my thoughts on it go right to what you just said, Doyle, in that you have to put the whole team in the best position for success. And at this point, Jermaine Jones can't be the fulcrum of that team. That's just not where this U.S. player pool is at. It's not where the team is at. It's not where they're best positioned to be successful. So that's where Bruce Arena comes in. It's his job to make difficult decisions. And we've seen in the start of his tenure, he likes Jermaine Jones. He likes Jermaine Jones' ability to affect the game. He likes his veteran presence. He likes that little bit of CONCACAF that he has. We'll see how he balances that here on out. Of course, the Gold Cup this summer, more World Cup qualifying to come. Let us know what you think. We want your thoughts, of course, 401-206-0MLS. That's the Hot Take Hotline, in case you were wondering. Also, at Extra Time Radio, extratime@mlssoccer.com. When we come back, we're going to go right into the mailbag.
Fans, we want to hear from you. You're encouraged to email extratime@mlssoccer.com or tweet at Extra Time Radio with any comments, questions, or reactions.
You used to call me on my cell phone late night when you need my love. Call me on my cell phone late night when you need my love. And I know when that hotline.
Back now on Extra Time Radio, hanging out in the green room. David Goss, Andrew Wiebe, and Matt Doyle. Hot Take Hotline, it's coming up in just a second. 401-206-0MLS. I know. I'm just going to – I need to
Why
come up with a new one.
Why are you sticking a one? I thought you were trying to workshop stuff right now.
Yeah,
how
I
you
was.
Workshopping?
401. I mean, that's true. I'm not
– Maybe try a little bit of like
– You got
a
something? You got something for me?
Friday-style rap?
Okay. You want to try that?
Oh,
no?
Me? I don't. I like to keep my things polished. I don't like to.
You don't like to debut.
I'm not a big mixtape guy.
Okay. Okay. Yeah. I feel you on that one. Hey, look, we'll get to the Hot Take Hotline in just a second, but there is breaking news. 75,000 in GAM, 225,000 in TAM. Tony Chani, they're going somewhere. Where might it be, guys? Any guesses? No?
Vancouver?
Oh, somebody's checking Twitter over here while I'm hosting the show. Yeah, Kakuta Mane is on the move. He is going to Columbus Crew SC. The deal got done on this Thursday, late here in the afternoon on Eastern Time. Tony Chani, GAM, TAM, headed to Vancouver. This is a huge MLS trade. There's no other way to put it. Doyle, I have to imagine you have thoughts. I mean, Mane's a guy that U.S. national team fans are slobbering over. Has not really lived up to billing this year in Vancouver. Seems to have lost his starting job, but a fresh start looks like for him.
Yeah, and I mean, obviously something's going on in Vancouver, right? Because they had this good young core a couple of years ago, and it's just it's sort of fallen apart. And Mane being shipped out, I mean, God, he was untouchable. 8 months ago, 9 months ago, but something has happened, and you know, they're in the midst of a teardown and rebuild, and he was their best trade chip, and in return they got a guy in Chani who, you know, he's an international, he's played for the U.S., but he's cap tied to Cameroon now. They got a guy who kind of fits pretty snugly in central midfield in terms of what they need. They got a bag full of allocation money that they can probably put to good use. And I mean, they got the start of a new era. That's what this feels like for Vancouver. It is strange, though, because Kakuta Mane, before he got injured last year, I think other than Ignacio Piatti, he was the most influential winger in the league. He is a rare talent, and it's tough to give up the more talented guy in any trade, especially when he's also 5 years younger.
Let's look at the other side, which is that Columbus came off MLS Cup. They lose Kai Kamara, and they basically turned that back around into picking up, like Doyle said, a player who's infinitely younger and can be a game changer.
Can you be infinite? Can you be
infinite?
Yeah, he's endlessly younger.
Okay.
He's younger forever. Is he not younger forever?
I'm not sure how that's how it works. Yeah, not sure that's how it works. But continue. Yeah, but what happens now? I mean, where do you fit him in?
I mean, you know what I'm going to say.
What?
Give Justin Meram the number 10.
Go ahead and take a sip of water or juice, coffee, whatever you're on.
Put Mane and Finley on the outside.
Meram
as
a 10 is now David's
That attacking
drink.
Four? I mean, you've got speed. You've got players who can switch in and out and move positions. Miram can float out wide. Both of those other players
can
cut in.
Let me ask you this. Yep. What happens if their plan isn't to use Justin Miram as a number 10? What if they're still committed to playing Higuain there? Do you think that there's more trades in the works for Columbus?
I could see that happen. And you talk about Chani wasn't a starter for them. Maybe this is a way for them in some basically three-team trade to find a central midfielder. And that could be potential there. Columbus, I don't think, is settled right now, but they've gotten a couple better results. Miram's played as well as anyone in MLS to start this season. Why would that be the guy you wouldn't go with? But Greg Berhalter loves him some Pipe Higuain, so who am I to speak?
Yeah, I don't know either. And at the worst case scenario here, Kakuta Mane is rolling off the bench and running like 300 miles per hour downhill at people.
Yeah, or Miram is, or Finley is. I mean, you have options.
I don't think you give up that much to bring this guy off the bench. I think Kakuta Mane is a starter for Columbus, and I do wonder what it means for that attack. I think that there's another trade happening. So we'll see.
Okay, we will see. Let's go to the hot take hotline because I have been waiting patiently for this moment all show. I made you leak some out before. What do we got in there?
Hey, what's up, boys? This is Bill Carroll, Section 132. MLS playing during the international break. I think it's a great idea. If it means avoiding a Wednesday night game sometime during the season, I'll take it anytime. And plus, it gives all the young guys a chance to get out there and play. I like when they play during the international break. I like to hear what you guys have to say. Talk to you later, boys.
Hey, Bill Carroll. He is a legend, an absolute legend. I like his logic. As a fan, he likes to see, especially because the Red Bulls have this academy structure and have Red Bulls 2 and are bringing players 3. He wants to see those guys get opportunities, and he doesn't want to go to games on Wednesday nights. I can understand that. I can also understand the flip side of people saying, I want the big stars as much as possible. I don't want to see games when they're gone. I don't want to see games that don't include 3, 4, 5, 6 of the marquee players. It's a tough balance. It really is, but there's no balance here. Bill Carroll's a legend. Legend.
Yeah, I agree. I love reading his emails, and now I love getting his voice.
Now we get his voice. Yeah, connecting his voice. What else do we have in this wondrous thing we call the Hot Take Hotline?
We talked about the best national team players a lot over the last week, so we got a couple different opinions. Here's one.
Hi, my name is Joey Jablowski. I'm from Omaha, Nebraska, for a quick take for MLS soccer. I think that actually Tim Howard is the best U.S. national team player ever. I think you guys always, always under-exaggerate the defensive players and over-exaggerate the attacking players. Tim Howard has had clutch games even through age 38 for both club and country. Tim Howard, best national team player ever.
Doyle, you had a physical reaction to that one. What do you think?
I think it's arguable whether or not he's even the best goalkeeper ever.
Boom.
I think if you're looking at a top 10, Tim Howard definitely is on the list. I think it's very tough to make an argument that he's the best national team player ever, though. But certainly his performance against Belgium, that's an all-timer. He's had his moments. He was great against Panama on Tuesday. I'm glad that we still have Tim Howard doing Tim Howard stuff, but I don't think I can get on board with that sentiment.
So who is the greatest U.S. national team goalkeeper? Brad Friedel, Casey Keller, Tony Meola, Tim Howard? Where do you fall?
I actually think it is Howard, but I understand that a lot of people will say Friedel and a lot of people will say Keller, and they both have really good arguments, but you can't go wrong with any of them.
And he means me.
Yeah, I was going to say, Dave has slow played this so much because he was riled up.
I'm less riled up now, but I just think Brad Friedel led them to the deepest point of a World Cup in U.S. modern history.
Wait a minute. What? I have an alternate take on that. Brad Friedel's performance at the 2002 World Cup is actually kind of overrated.
Because he saved so many PKs.
Why didn't you call the Hot Take Hotline with that?
Yeah,
we have a
he
hotline
saved a couple
just
of PKs, but he didn't have to make a save in I think two or three of the games, other than one clearance that he flubbed against Mexico straight to Blanco. Look. I'm not saying Brad Friedel was bad, but people who treat that run like he was a miracle worker, I mean, other than the penalty save, no. you know, and one of those penalty saves actually came against Poland, which, you know, that game was already over at that point. So it's look, Brad Friedel was awesome, but that his World Cup performance in 2002 was, I think, inferior to what Howard did in 2014.
But what people will say is, well, he didn't play for the national team as long, and just his club success doesn't put him over Howard. But my point is, he has national team success. He has club success. He has club success in multiple countries for a number of years.
He was also a pioneer in the work permit process. A guy who opened the door for the Tim Howards of the world
invented
later on. Although Tim Howard might say, hey, he didn't exactly help me out when it came to my work permit.
Yeah.
But they kind of walked that one back here recently. We also have a really good one from an Uncle Paul or something. I mean, a weird, strange one here.
And here with a fan saver is 352-rific, footy-fantastic Uncle Paul. Yeah, this is your Uncle Paul. Here's an answer for you. Who is the greatest American soccer player of all time? Without a doubt, hands down, it's the unparalleled, unbelievable Mia Hamm.
Hey, good point there from Uncle Paul, although that was not the weirdest one we had. I can only imagine what's going to come through this hot take hotline on a week-to-week basis, but that's a good distinction there. We said the best U.S. national team player of all time. What we didn't say and should have said, absolutely should have said, was men's national team player.
Not necessarily.
Of all time.
Yeah.
By the way,
he was wrong anyway. If we're saying the best women's player of all time, it's Michelle Akers.
I knew Doyle was going to say that. That gets me so pumped.
I know. I was just waiting for the moment
you know,
which
you know
we shot that
down
as well.
You know who will come out and tell you that? Mia freaking Hamm. Come on, it's Michelle Akers.
No, I agree with
yeah,
that,
no.
And that's why I was excited that
that's
you
why
just
this
said
is,
that.
That's why this is the Hot Take Hotline. They come in.
Some
you know who could be the best national player of all time?
Hello, my name is Shane. I'm 12 years old, and I play for the Delmar Carmel Valley Sharks. Christian Pulisic is awesome!
He is awesome. Thank you, Shane, for hitting us up. Go Sharks! Let's go! San Diego, represent. This is
our official sponsor of the
I know.
Del
well,
Mar-ray
we're just a
Sharks.
Supporter. Let's not put sponsor next to our name just yet. I don't know if we have the budget to to do that here, but we definitely are supporting. We're definitely supporting. It's awesome. I mean, it's awesome for me to hear you know, that we're engaging with all sorts of different people out there, from Uncle Paul to Shane. It's good stuff. So hit us up at the Hot Take Hotline, 401-206-0MLS. That's all we have for this show. Hope you enjoyed it with Jonathan Spector. Of course, Matt Doyle making his triumphant return as well. Watch the games this weekend. Hit us up on the hotline. Send us your emails and tweets. With that, we'll see you on Monday, everybody.
You're listening to Extra Time Radio.